Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of M365 Voice. I'm Antonio Mayo.
I am Sarah Hazy.
And I am Mike Mararani.
And today we're fortunate to have another friend with us as a guest, Erica Tooley, who I've known for, we were figuring this out yesterday, what, about 10 years? We are going to talk about some of our favorite topics, which is security and governance in the Microsoft world for AI and M365 Copilot.
Perfect.
So, Erica, why don't you tell everyone what you do?
Yeah. Hey, really glad to be here. Thanks for having me. So I work on the Microsoft Purview product marketing team, covering Purview plus Copilot and agents, and how customers can secure and govern their data to be able to get the value from those tools.
We are very excited to have you here, Erica. I think all four of us go way back. We've all known each other for quite some time. I don't think that I've ever had the privilege of being on a podcast with you, so I'm looking forward to being able to dive in and discuss.
Absolutely. Same.
So that topic that you've talked about that you worked on, that's something that we've seen take get a lot of attention in the last, I'll say, year. Right, this whole notion of AI has kind of reignited that conversation around data protection, around security, around governance. I'm wondering, you're in the thick of it, right? So are you seeing the same thing? Like, is that when people are approaching AI, is that what's top of mind right now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've all been having this conversation probably our whole careers, right? Hey, you need to get your permissions correct. You need to make sure you have proper governance in your environments. And this is the next round of that. Yeah. But in this case, there's finally urgency behind it because of AI using that as a data source. And if you don't have this done, at least somewhat, then it'll impact the ROI of those investments potentially.
Not to mention, good Carlos, some degree of alarm or agitation, maybe friction. With your business lines. I was just having this conversation with someone today that without appropriate permissioning, there might realistically be oversharing of content that then Copilot services, or there might be the perception that you shouldn't have access to things that you have, and both can be dangerous, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and you know what? It seems like it's this big daunting thing, but really, when I took on this role about 9 months ago now, being the SharePoint background and enthusiast that I am, really asked ourselves, what is it that drives potentially like oversharing or incorrect permissions? And we found that there was a couple things, if you just fix them, handle the vast majority of the issues. It doesn't have to be like a multi-year project. Like in most cases, you could do those quick things in a couple weeks.
And can you talk about what a couple of those quick things are?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So first, remember back in the day when you created a SharePoint site, by default, it would be set to public so that everyone in the organization could access the content. So switching that to private really solves a lot of the issue, right? Because then if you're not in an explicit security group or SharePoint group on that site, you won't have access to the content. If you don't have access, Copilot and agents based on that M365 content won't have access. Then the other thing is there's a misperception that if you've used the everyone in the organization link to share a file, that now everyone in the organization has access through Copilot. And that's actually not true. You have to have clicked on that link someone shared with you to essentially redeem an access token in order for it to show up in, you know, as you having access and therefore Copilot having access.
Erica, by that, do you mean that if you are given access using that EEEU group, everyone except external users, but and you don't have any other more direct access to it, that then you have to click on the link in order to redeem the token for Copilot?
Yeah, so actually, I'm glad you brought that up. So I'm specifically talking about when you click share and you choose the option, everyone in the organization can click on this link and get access.
So you mean that one, and then they would have to click on the link, not everyone except external users.
Okay. Yeah. Although let's talk about that security group for a second. So yes. When you change a site from public to private, it automatically removes that from
correct.
The site, unless there's broken inheritance.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you, the reverse is true as well. If you change a site from private to public, it actually adds the everyone except external user group with permissions to the site.
Yeah, so I've been encouraging people to focus less on that group itself and more about should the site be public or private, because then that solves the issue, and then potentially fixing broken inheritance where it's not appropriate, which, again, if it should be a private site, you fix that link, you're good.
But we've all been in the SharePoint world for so long, and we know how the users will like to break the rules all the time, especially breaking the security permission inheritance. So there's always going to be this battle where you're going to share a link and or you're going to actually go into managed access or do it the old way, the way SharePoint is. Because we still have, if someone is a little bit technical savvy, they can go and actually break the inheritance. And that still is causing some headaches for AI users. What's your thought on that?
Some, because we still have it. I can't believe we're talking about that, because Erica, we could have been, probably did have this conversation 15 years ago, right? That breaking inheritance is a bad idea. And I can remember advising people, if you're going to break inheritance anywhere on your site collection, you should really create a map that you can hand over to whoever the next administrator is going to be. And we have more tools to find broken inheritance now, but people still do it all the time. And it's interesting, I think, the Microsoft recommendation about making things instead of public, private, because somewhere in the SharePoint evolution from 2007 to 2010 to 2013, we sort of did this mindset shift where I think we created more and more site collections, we made them smaller, and we sort of leaned in to giving people over access. And I don't just mean our most sensitive data, but since then, a lot of companies have started to think about providing less access and a least privilege model. And that's really what Microsoft is now espousing, which is a significant shift maybe from where people have antique thinking from 2013 to 2018.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And that's why you need Purview in addition to fixing SharePoint permissions, right? So think about it this, right? The 80-20 rule. So maybe you'll take care of 80% of the problems, is switching it from public to private, making sure that you have the correct sharing link configured for the right site. So then how do you identify the sensitive and critical data and then mitigate that further? And that's where the more discovery and visualization in Purview, and then the actions that you can take to address what you find through that visualization, is where you can really get that last 20% handled. Well, let's say the last 15%, because there's always going to be a little bit of ongoing maintenance as the way people use technology changes over time, and as you are looking out for those.
I feel like the move to Teams was one thing that kind of, to your point, Sarah, everyone suddenly took on the notion of sharing everything with everyone, right? Mm-hmm. Why not? And stuff's just getting shared all over the organization. Add someone to a team, make them a member. Make Teams public. Everyone should be able to discover Teams and add themselves to a team. Like, the onslaught of Teams was suddenly, we're getting sites created everywhere and everybody's sharing everything with everyone everywhere. And I think there is a shift away from that now to your point around more of a least privileged model.
I really am intrigued, Erica, because I keep on coming back to it clearly, and Mike and Antonio will stop me at some point from doing it, but when you're thinking about going from public to private, you could, when you go from a public site to a private, it removes everyone except external users, which may mean that when you do that, especially for a large swath of sites, you are going to be effectively breaking people's access to it. Many of them may not need access, but some of them might. So how do you see organizations who take that on? Do they do it in a big bang? Do they kind of do it in a gradual state to control that flow of challenge?
That's a really great question. And there isn't any one answer, obviously, you know, because every organization is different. But I see them handling it really in one of two ways. Number one, making sure there's actually site owners assigned to respond to any permission requests. So if they do disable it, it's kind of like what we used to call a scream test. Like, if something's wrong, someone will scream and you know you need to fix it. Well, making sure you have someone who can respond to those screams. And so, you know, I was really excited when we added some of the SharePoint Advanced Management capabilities to the Copilot license, because one of the things they have is the ability, a report you can run to see sites that don't have site owners, so you can fix that.
The data access governance reports.
Yeah. And you can either, you know, find the right user to assign, or you can just create like an email enabled security group or similar where the requests all go to a centralized team to triage for those sites that maybe you don't have a clear non-IT owner.
To your question, Sarah, so as someone who's actually done a mass, for a large organization, a mass change of a large number of sites from public to private, I usually recommend not doing it across all sites, because mm-hmm. you can break things in certain instances, right? So for example, if you have Yammer groups that have, or even Engage groups that have a SharePoint site behind them, if yeah. you switch those from public to private, you break everybody's access to the Yammer group. Yeah. So there are instances where it can break things.
Yep.
Yeah. So do need to be careful. You need to kind of test that in a bit of a pilot with a broad set of different kinds mm-hmm. of sites, and just make sure you're not breaking stuff, because the screen test is effective. Like, I actually yeah. like using the screen test. Mm-hmm. Depending on the customer environment, though, the screen test can sometimes be painful.
Right. So.
But if we take it a little bit further, more going into AI readiness, even in Purview, and there is DSPM that we can use to kind of get our tenant, the data ready for, you know, the AI world. What's mm-hmm. If you want to tell us, how do you approach things using DSPM or data security posture management?
Yeah, so I think one of our best tools, especially for preparing for Copilot, is our oversharing assessment.
Right.
So that will scan your SharePoint sites. It'll look at the how many documents in those sites contain sensitive information as identified by some patterns we have set up in Purview to identify that. Also looks at things like how many people are accessing the site in the last 30 days mm-hmm. to correlate those two together to help you prioritize what actually you need to fix first. Because if it's an actively used site that has sensitive data that doesn't have sensitivity labels that are applying protections to that sensitive data, maybe start with those sites first, and then you can move on to the older, less used sites over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you raised a good point there, Erica, that risk assessment report in DSPM for AI is really useful. The information it brings back is at the site level, mm-hmm. right? It's like, this site has this many numbers of this, and this.
Right.
And the prioritization word I wanted to key off of, that I think that is a key way to look at that report. It helps you prioritize, where do I need to go to investigate further and remediate?
Exactly.
Because across large environments, trying to hit every site in every instance, I think we started off with this. That is a large, difficult project to do if you want it across everywhere. And the better approach is often to assess first and then prioritize.
Yeah, and then either in the product now or coming really, really soon, I can't remember, you'll be able to export that list into a CSV, which of course we love using CSVs in PowerShell to apply settings to protect those sites.
Yes,
yeah.
That is rolling out right now.
Perfect.
Yeah, and JSON too, you'll be able to export it to JSON.
All right. Yeah. Sometimes I can't keep track of what we've actually said publicly and not. So thanks for keeping me honest.
On that topic, though, is there any recent announcements that Microsoft has made around security and Purview in particular in order to enable AI that you can maybe share with us?
Yeah. Okay. So this one is my favorite one we've done in a while. So last week at the Copilot Wave 2 announcement, we introduced our agents dashboard. So we have heard loud and clear from customers and analysts that, you know, as agents take off and users are creating them, we want to be able to see a list of what agents exist in my environment. Very and true. Then, of course, assess the security and governance risk posture. So in DSPM for AI in June, maybe even a little earlier in May, we'll see if we can pull it off, we'll be releasing this dashboard. And then you can click into an individual agent to see all sorts of stats about usage trends, what percentage of interactions contain sensitive data in either the prompt or the response, of the people using the agent, have we identified risky usage patterns across M365 that make them a low, medium, or high risk user? Again, these things will help you prioritize maybe what agents you need to take a look at first as a human to take some mitigations, since there could potentially, depending on the size of your organization and the popularity of agents, be a lot to look at.
I love that.
Yeah. I'm excited about that feature because, you know, you can envision as companies start to go towards agents, you're going to end up with like 100 Hello World agents. Right. Exactly. And you don't want those sitting there for a long period of time just doing nothing, just because people tried it out and want to see what happens.
Exactly. Yeah,
so that's an exciting feature.
Being able to have more reporting to determine even retention for agents, and I mean lowercase r retention, but knowing when they were last accessed, because when you create an agent and you point it at a certain set of files, whoever creates that agent may or may not be the same person who's adding more files to the document library, the folder, the location. And as they add more files, they may be incorporating more sensitive files that they don't realize are being consumed by that agent.
100%.
And I think that that's an important thing to be able to look at from an agent overall health and wealth perspective. And if it's not being accessed and utilized, that it might have a natural life cycle for agents.
You're completely right. We've been thinking a lot about this too, because agents, we've done this before when teams took off, where things will proliferate very fast. Like, what can we learn from that and apply to agents? So in Purview, we're really thinking about like, how can you set policies up once and have it apply, you know, to M365 Copilot, to agents as they're onboarding, so you're not having to rethink this every time and add new policies every time for every agent. You will notify you if your existing policies for some reason don't cover, you know, this new agent or this new class of agents, so you can fix it. But it shouldn't. It should be more about looking for outliers that you didn't anticipate than like having to do a bunch of work to maintain the usual, agents people are building, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Other announcements? Is there any others that you're excited about?
I feel like there's just so much happening. People have been asking for, of course, more ways to pivot the data in DSPM for AI. So we're starting to look at ways to bring in maybe data from their intra profiles. Mm. So like, for example, people want to look at things by department or by country and start breaking down usage that way. Mm-hmm. This one isn't officially on the roadmap yet, but it was very top of mind. We have lots of pre-built sensitive information types in Purview, but not all of them apply to every organization. How do you filter that out? I hope we can solve that one soon. It's actually quite a challenging engineering problem to solve. And then also, this isn't related to features and product, but the world is changing so fast now with AI. We're really focusing a lot on how to make our business itself more agile to make sure when there is feedback and a clear trend that it gets surfaced to the right people as quickly as possible, and that our engineering teams can respond as quickly as possible and it's the right thing to do to build something new. So that agents dashboard I was talking about, it went from not being a thing to fully coded and built in 4 weeks, which I think is a record at Microsoft. We used to do like semester planning. So twice a year, do a big planning process. And that just doesn't work in the AI world anymore. So while you might not see that like on a roadmap, there's a lot of investments and things like that going on.
I've wondered about that because I have a few instances seeing new features suddenly come out and it never appeared in the roadmap. Mm-hmm. And it was never part of a conversation. And we never learned about it at MVP Summit. And suddenly this feature shows up and it's like, what the hell? Exactly. We didn't know this was coming.
True.
It's a great feature.
Surprise.
But that explains it.
Well, and you can give us feedback too, everyone watching. There's such a thing as too fast, but we have to try to find the right balance. So we're all in this together.
And sometimes you have to be able to deploy things in order to be able to see what the market is and to test the market for the use of that item. So you don't always want to make a big splash and put it in the roadmap and have message center announcements and huge announcements if what you're really looking is to get feedback on a directional course of development.
Good point. Yeah.
And then you said the right word. We have to, you're trying to find the right balance. We are living right now in a much faster world with the AI that the clients will require a lot more responses and features and deliveries of things from everyone, from Microsoft specifically. So just answering to that is very challenging. And so finding the right balance into what do you release? Is it fast enough? Is it not fast enough? So it's an interesting world for sure.
100%.
I'm going to prompt you with a feature, and if you don't know it, we can skip it. But
sure.
One that I'm really excited about is data security investigations.
Ah, yeah.
DSI. It's okay. Super cool. Can you talk a little bit about that one? It's not AI. Well, is it AI? A little bit.
Yeah, there's okay. So let's start with what it is. I mean, we have to do all sorts of investigations through the course of work. It could be. Because there was a policy that was broken. It could be there was some type of a security incident. I'm sure you could think of lots more examples.
Yeah, data leaks.
Yep. But you need to be able to search all your, you know, data potentially in M365 and even beyond eventually to be able to see what is in the scope of this incident. And so DSI is our tool to be able to do that. It just came out in public preview last week, so it's quite new. But it is very much related to AI because once you're dealing with this large amount of data, you really need AI to be able to quickly identify the relevant data to this incident and also start building patterns and correlations between the data itself to find related patterns that a human couldn't recognize by themselves. And so that's the main value prop of the tool. Of course, you can do a little bit more of it, but what are you excited about?
So there is so much functionality in there that I just recently learned about that's not obvious from when you originally see it. Like one challenge we've seen with our customers is when a DLP alert happens, who investigates it? Right? Because I've seen you can surface a DLP alert in the purview solution, right? You can see DLP alerts listed there. You can surface them in Defender, in the Defender portal. You can surface them in Sentinel, right? And so which is the best place to go and who investigates them? Because often I've seen companies assign them to a SOC team and the SOC analysts, they don't have context into the data. They don't have a nice way to correlate, okay, there's this DLP alert that's talking about one document or one email. But really, the scope of content that was leaked or breached is 100 million documents or something significant, right? There's been no nice way to do that. So the ability to direct the investigation of that to DSI, where not only is it collecting all of this data about the breach, about the alert or incident, and correlating it across all your content, right? So you can investigate a breach that's one document, or that's 100 million documents, right? It really does help you analyze what Microsoft calls the blast radius of the incident. And then it has AI built into it to help you categorize all of the data that's part of the breach so that if it is saying 100 million documents, you could actually perhaps narrow that down to what is really most relevant and therefore expedite the investigation of the incident. So there's a lot in there. Like, yeah, it's a very cool tool. If you can't tell that I'm excited about it.
Yeah. And, it is, I think, like you said, it's going to have many layers of value there that I probably don't even realize yet. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Erica, thank you so much for joining us. I know we set this up on short notice, but you and I see each other every few months, often at conferences or at Microsoft things. So really, really happy to have you on the podcast and hope to have you again soon. But thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It was lovely having you. Bye-bye. Thank you.